Today is our last sermon on the founding of our country, especially the Declaration of Independence, and I think I started this the first Sunday in July. I usually do something around July 4th. And again, the reason why I do is because I think these things are being lost. They ought to be taught in our homes. They ought to be taught in schools. And I believe they ought to be taught in churches. Because our country was founded on a lot of moral principles taken right from God's holy word. It's kind of bittersweet for me. I love learning about history. I love studying it. I love learning new things. And today, I'm a little bit emotional. Yesterday, I was asked to do the funeral, the memorial service, for Brother Raymond Ellis. Brother Ellis, I met him back in the 90s. I was preaching in Illinois with Brother Cockrell and Brother Dan Stepp and Brother Tim Hillig. And met Brother Ellis for the first time. And he pastored Grace Missionary Baptist Church until he was 97 years old. Right up to his very last Sunday that he was able to preach, he baptized two people. And then he had a lot of complications. But he was a little feller, kind of like me. And I learned a lot yesterday that I didn't know about Brother Ellis. He was born in 1922. He basically has lived there in Marion, Illinois, his whole life. In fact, he lives on the farm that he grew up on. He was an only child. His dad worked in the coal mines. And back in Depression days, his dad broke his leg while working in the coal mine. Of course, back then, when you broke a bone, it was really serious. And Brother Ellis was only 11 years old, and it was his responsibility to see that the crop that they had planted in the spring be harvested so his mother could put it up, because they didn't have Walmart. You couldn't just go buy things off the shelf. And then that following spring, he was the one responsible to plant their crop with a plow and a mule as an 11, 12-year-old boy. He went into the Army and served in World War II from 1942 to 1945. And it was so fascinating. His grandkids and his kids gave testimonials about him. And one, Mindy Harville was her name, she took his boots up there and she started to tell. And she said those boots were so special because she realizes she doesn't know if anybody else would be able to fill them again. It was his boots. But they told about their grandpa. And the kids didn't even know till many years later that he had gotten a Bronze Star in World War II because he never talked about it. He was saved in 1955, and then he was called to preach, and he pastored all the way up till he was 97. When I got done preaching, they had a military. I don't know, I can't remember being part of a military funeral to the end of it. And there must have been 15 VFW men there. And they did a gun salute. And it just moved my heart when I saw how careful they were with the flag and how they told that it was men like Brother Ellis. He's one of the reasons why we have the freedoms we have today. And when they folded that flag and presented that and his medal to his family, it just moved me to tears. Because we're losing some really great people. He's with the Lord. And I just pray. I was telling the story of my dad, and he said, "Boy, he's a better man than me." And I said, "Far better than me." But I pray. I wish you could have been there to see how his family just spoke so glowingly of him. And it was just a great honor to be able to preach his funeral. And it made me think of the sacrifices that the signers of the Declaration of Independence made. The four references to God in the Declaration of Independence tell us a lot about our founding fathers. It speaks in unmistakable terms of their faith in God. Their love of freedom, their willingness to expose themselves and to suffer for righteousness. History reveals that their faithfulness, unselfishness, and their perseverance is what was so important in the founding of our nation. And it's a shame to sell at so cheap a rate those liberties that they gave so much of themselves to secure. Freedom is not free. Liberty was costly to achieve. And it's costly to maintain. The men who signed the Declaration knew full well what wrath they exposed themselves to from the British government. They pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. Many of them were successful businessmen who lost all their property. Some sold their property and funded the war and ended up in poverty. Many lost their health through extreme exertion, stress, or imprisonment, and some lost their lives. And we're almost 250 years removed. We need to be reminded what they were willing to give so that you and I can live free. We cannot really calculate how much we owe the founders for the freedoms that Americans have enjoyed for the past 200 plus years. I remember when I was writing this article, that I got an email on July 4th that gave details of what happened to the signers of the Declaration of Independence. And I think it's powerful, so I'm going to read it. Have you ever wondered what happened to the 56 men who signed the Declaration of Independence? Five signers were captured by the British as traitors and tortured before they died. 12 had their homes ransacked and burned. 2 lost their sons serving in the Revolutionary Army. Another had 2 sons captured. 9 of the 56 fought and died from wounds or hardships of the Revolutionary War. They signed and they pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. What kind of men were they? 24 were lawyers and jurists. 11 were merchants. 9 were farmers and plantation owners. Men of means, well educated. But they signed the Declaration of Independence knowing full well that the penalty would be death if they were captured. Carter Braxton of Virginia, a wealthy planter and trader, saw his ships swept from the seas by the British Navy. He sold his home and properties to pay his debts and died in rags. Thomas McKeon was so hounded by the British that he was forced to move his family almost constantly. He served in the Congress without pay, and his family was kept in hiding. His possessions were taken from him, and poverty was his reward. Vandals or soldiers looted the properties of Dillery, Hall, Clymer, Walton, Gwinnett, Hayward, Rutledge, and Middleton. At the Battle of Yorktown, Thomas Nelson, Jr. noted that the British General Cornwallis had taken over the Nelson home for his headquarters. He quietly urged General George Washington to open fire. The home was destroyed, and Nelson died bankrupt. Francis Lewis had his home and properties destroyed. The enemy jailed his wife, and she died within a few months. John Hart was driven from his wife's bedside as she was dying. Their 13 children fled for their lives. His fields and his grist mill were laid to waste. For more than a year, he lived in forests and caves, returning home to find his wife dead and his children vanished. So take a few minutes while enjoying your 4th of July holiday and silently thank these patriots. It's not much to ask for the price that they paid. Remember, freedom is never free. In an age of political corruption and graft and greed on the part of our elected officials, it is really refreshing to read of men who valued the advancement of liberty over personal profit or power. I fear that we are electing men and women who have drunk deeply from the poison well of secular humanism and its educational philosophy. And they think that they are humanistic gods to be obeyed and worshipped by the masses. They often feast on the bounties of an oppressive tax program at the expense of their constituents and know little of the sacrifices and the hardships of our founding fathers. And yet, many of them today think that it's cool to join in the chorus of those who want to diminish the founding of the United States of America. It really sickens me. When I see what's going on in Portland, in Seattle, Chicago, in New York, where there are young people who want to tear down, I heard one of them say he wants to burn down the system. I pray that God will raise up true statesmen who are willing to put God and country first, regardless of the cost, rather than their own political agenda and ideology. I'll never cast in my lot with those who seek to diminish the founding of our country and those brave men and women who put their lives on the line so that we could be free. I'll not join hands with Antifa or BLM Inc. or any other insurrectionist, anarchist group that wants to destroy the United States of America and replace it with what? And it bothers me that we have so many people today that just live like this is apt, like they don't even care. I know I haven't done much preaching today. I'm going to now. I'm thankful. I'm so thankful that God in His providence allowed me to be born in America. I can remember as a little kid in the summertime, we didn't have air conditioning. I'd lay in bed and my sweat just rolling off. Couldn't fall asleep. And I start to think of places where I've read, and I thought it'd be a hot summer night, and I'd just say, God, I didn't even know the Lord. I didn't know how to pray or anything. And I remember laying in bed saying, God, I'm so thankful I wasn't born somewhere where it's hot all the time. I'd never be able to sleep. I'm thankful that God in His providence He as sinful as I was, and a grief to my mother's heart. God raised up a man to preach the gospel to me when I was 20 years old. Changed my life forever. I'm so thankful today to be saved. As unworthy as I am, it amazes me that Jesus Christ gave His life for me. That He died in my place for my sins. And He suffered my punishment and rose again to give me life. I don't deserve it. I deserve to go to hell. Because I know what a terrible sinner I am and have been. But He loved me and gave Himself for me. He changed my life forever. I hope you know the Lord today. There's nothing more important. Neither is there salvation in any other, for there is none other name given among men whereby we must be saved. I pray to God that you and I will every day offer thanks to the Lord for what He's done in our lives, for the families that He's placed us in, for the church that we have, for the freedoms that we still have to preach the gospel, even though those freedoms are being taken away. I want to end. I know this has been disjointed today, and please forgive me. I want to end by talking about what I believe the Bible teaches about components of good government. Our founders paid a great price to obtain and establish a good government. God has ordained human government, and His Word tells us what good government ensures for us. The passage in 1 Timothy 2, verses 1 through 4 says, I exhort, therefore, that first of all, supplications, prayers, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men, for kings, and for all that are in authority, that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life, in all godliness and honesty. For this is good and acceptable in the sight of God our Savior, who will have all men to be saved and to come unto the knowledge of the truth. God gave us representative government in America. We ought to know our representatives well enough to pray intelligently for them, and even to contact them about matters that are being voted upon, because they are things that affect us personally, as citizens and as Christians. I believe that we need to know what our government, how it's structured. We need to know what the Constitution provides for us, and hold our elected leaders responsible for defending it. when they're inducted into office, they swear on the Bible to uphold the Constitution. Most people in America don't even know that we have freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of assembly, freedom of the press. All these things are being taken away. Now, the social media, the tech giants, they are controlling the press. People don't read newspapers anymore. They don't get their news from those sources. They get their news from Facebook and Twitter. And the people who own Facebook and Twitter decide what news they will provide. And as a result, the people that own Facebook and Twitter are really tyrants. They don't believe in freedom of speech. They believe in freedom only in the speech that they agree with. So we're losing this freedom of speech in the United States. In fact, there is a movement on right now in the House of Representatives, headed up by Ilhan Omar and others of their ilk, who want to ban the Bible as hate speech. That's sick. But it's coming. If you preach against homosexuality, they're going to try to shut you down. In Canada, they can do it now. Because if you don't toe the groupthink line, they'll cancel you. We have people in our world today, they don't want to just defeat people, they want to destroy them, their business, their livelihood, everything. It's the cancel culture. All because they didn't say exactly what the group thinks they should say. That's un-American. The passage here in Timothy tells us of two things that good government should bring to us. First, a quiet and peaceable life. Think about that. Good government should provide us a quiet and peaceable life. Can that be said in the city of Chicago? In Portland, Washington, or Seattle, Washington, Portland, Oregon? Can those people that live in those cities that are being burned by Antifa, can they say that their elected officials are providing for them a quiet and peaceable life? Of course not. It's certainly desirable and reassuring to live in a well-ordered society. And government's primary role is to protect its citizens. It says in Romans 13:4, "For he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain, for he is the minister of God, a revenger, to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil." The founders certainly did not envision a government that is so intrusive that it can fire businessmen in the private sector, take over businesses, and choke free enterprise to death through excessive regulations. They didn't envision that. Nor did they ever imagine that the government would control the media, restrict freedom of religion, and stifle free speech. There's a fight right now on in California. Gavin Newsom, the governor, has stated that people are free to protest and even riot. But they can't go to church and they can't sing and a prominent pastor, John MacArthur of Grace Community Church, is defying the order and they're threatening him with fines and imprisonment. In the United States of America, where enshrined in the very First Amendment, freedom of religion, freedom to assemble. And believe me, the people that attend church there, I'm sure that they have counted the cost and they accept the risk. And can I say this? There's a risk in everything you do. Every day you get up, there's a risk. You might, in fact, you're going to die. Mark it down. If you're not raptured, you're going to die. Because the wages of sin is death. And we're all sinners. We're all going to die. But I know Jesus Christ, and if you know Him, to live is Christ, to die is gain. To be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. So I urge you. And should a pastor have to tell, wash your hands? My mom and dad told me that when I was a kid. If you were ever a meat cutter, you got to wash your hands all the time. You'll be cutting up meat. Customer comes, you couldn't just... Now, I did it sometimes. I'd wipe it on my apron and just wait on... No, man, you got to wash up. I've been washing my hands my whole life. But just be cautious. I mean, how hard is it? If you're sick, don't come to church. Don't go to work. That's not hard. That's good old Buffalo Creek common sense, isn't it? But the people at that large church, they know the risks. What I'm asking you to do is trust the Lord. And believe me, and I mean this from the depths of my heart, there are people right now that they have people in their family who are high risk, who could easily get sick. I understand all that. The folks don't live in fear. There's going to come a time when, as I said last week, you're going to have to take your stand for the Lord. What usually happens in California generally trickles to the rest of the country. And if a governor decides that he's going to shut churches down under the guise of public safety, and people bow to that, when they're allowing people to riot freely in the streets, you're going to have serious problems. Secondly, listen, rather than providing and promoting peace and prosperity and goodwill, I think the government oftentimes is engaged in the dangerous process of social engineering. Bending people toward their will. Now, it's a blessing when government makes our communities a safe place to live and we're free to live out our faith. Secondly, good government facilitates the spread of the gospel. The freedom of religion and the ability to publish and proclaim the good news of the gospel has been a wonderful privilege in America. I believe it's one of the reasons why our country has enjoyed spiritual and material prosperity for over 200 years. A peaceful society that is respectful to God and His Word and His ways promotes the life-changing truth of the gospel. And how good indeed to be able to worship freely and live out our faith before men. The greatest freedom anyone can have is the freedom Jesus Christ alone gives. How unspeakably blessed to be free from the guilt and condemnation of sin through the blood of Jesus Christ. Sin no longer has dominion over those who receive Christ. Jesus said, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. If the Son, therefore, shall make you free, ye shall be free indeed." We need to pray for those in authority, that we may continue to maintain these two simple components of good government. The ability to live a quiet and peaceable life, and the promotion of the grace of the gospel. We are at a tipping point that I've never seen before. We've seen a lot of encroachments by the government, especially in the area of religious freedom and free speech. And these are things promised in the Bill of Rights. We've seen a general disregard for the Bible and a literal contempt for those who faithfully follow its teachings. There is every reason for us to be wide awake and knowledgeable of our government's activities. What we desperately need is to return to God and our spiritual foundations. That's what we need. I love my country. And I cherish my freedoms, but my heart is grieved over the state of America right now. How much God has given us, and it's a crying shame to forfeit these rich blessings through sin and wickedness, to sell our birthright for a mess of worldly pottage. I'll close with George Washington's words about the critical importance of religion and morality in government. "Of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. It is substantially true that virtue or morality is a necessary spring of popular government." We've come to an end. I'm sorry today for how this was somewhat disjointed. Forgive me. Pray for our country. Pray for souls to be saved. Pray for our children and our grandchildren, that God will protect them. I can't even imagine what enters into the mind of someone who actually joins Antifa. How much you must hate God and America to join up with something like that. Pray that God will move in our midst. Let's all stand.